Now, I won't be long tonight. You think that's a joke, don't you? Because we do have some other things. But maybe I could just have you take your Bibles and go tonight, since we've been dealing. Now, we left David a little bit behind in the last few weeks because of some other things. But now when we come to chapter 19, we're going to look at David in what we call the fugitive years. That's chapters 19 to 29. There's so much in there about the fugitive years. Because if you go over there to chapter 18 for just a moment, at verse 29, it'd be good if you would underline that verse. Where it says, "And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually." And that's about 10 years. So David is becoming a fugitive. And then when you see that in the 19th chapter, David or Jonathan tries to mend the fence between David and Saul. But Saul, of course, has one thing in mind: to get rid of David. So what happens is what I want to deal with tonight. We see facing your fears. David is going to have to face some fear. I come over there to for chapter 19. I just want to drop down to verse 18. And we're going to see some things in these next couple chapters. And I won't have time to deal as much as I would like to. But certainly I hope some things. We notice here in verse 18. Would you underline it? "And so David fled." I'm going to look at that tonight for a moment, because here we find David fled in faith. But when you come to chapter 20, we see again, notice verse 1 of chapter 20, "And David fled." Here he does it in fear. Now, what when he fled in faith? And by the way, what is faith? Faith is the inward capacity to see God behind everything. I hope you get that. Faith is the inward capacity to see God behind everything. God has a reason why he does what he does. And so we find him fleeing. But what he does, he flees to the sacred place and the safe place there in verse 18. Notice, if you will, "And so David fled," that is in faith, "and escaped, and he came to Samuel." Now that's a good fellow to be with. And I want you to notice here, it said to Ramah. I underline that because there's two names here. The first name is Ramah. The other name at the end of the verse there is Naoth. These two names are important. The word Ramah means a place of worship or a high place. And this was a sacred place. I share with you tonight, I was thinking about the application of that thought of my own thinking process. You know what the church is? Church is a sacred place. It's in any many ways our rhema. It's a place that when we have our troubles and whatever we're going through, thank God we can come to the safe haven, a place where we can get something that we need for our lives. You know, I think there are four types of families, people in the church. I want to give those to you, because when we come to church, was I think of Rhema, to me an application, because the church is a place that we worship. You can be in the family, but on the fringe. How many know people like that? In the family, but on the fringe. Unfaithful, uninvolved, uninterested. Don't be one of those, because you will really not enjoy your church. Secondly, there are those who are in the family, but on a fault-finding mission. You know those people? They're in the family, but they're on a fault-finding mission. They're always finding fault with the church. I had somebody say to me one time, he said, "Well, I just need to leave Northside because there are just too many hypocrites there." And I said, "Well, you need to stay on here, because one more won't hurt us." Because in a sense, he was a hypocrite. I hope you're not in the family but on the fringe, or in the family but on a fault-finding mission, because that ruins your work. Thirdly, there are those in the family but failing to contribute. There's the third kind. What I mean by that is they come and they only take. They're on the take, but not on the giving. They never give of their time or their talents or their tithe. How could you really love your church and really worship without giving of your time, your tithe, and certainly your talents? Boy, isn't this a talented church? You know, they had all this group up here tonight singing and doing all this because they were leaving. But, you know, Brother Scoble didn't say, well, Brother Stevens, you're leaving for 3 weeks. Why don't you sing? I don't have the talent. But I am thankful for the talent that just doesn't sit in the pews but is using those talents. See, you need to be in the family, but not on the fringe, in the family, but not on a fault-finding mission, in the family, but failing to contribute. There's the fourth kind, is in the family and in the fellowship. That's where you need to be. That's where I need. That's what Rhema's all about. Now, we're going to have a lot of people going this summer, but the church will go on. It is going to need others to pick up where these have left off until they come back. All except for Justin. He will be back because there is a young lady here that he should get a ring on that finger as soon as possible. I don't know why God keeps telling me to say that. I'm just kidding, of course. No, I'm not really kidding. He fled to that safe place as well as that sacred place, because that's found in the name Naoth. The root meaning means to rest. I don't know about you, but the church to me is a place of rest. I don't mean physically. You know, I hear so many people at times talk about, well, I was just so tired. You know what happens with that kind of thinking? Even though you didn't go to church, you're going to be just as tired, because it is the spirit that needs the refreshing, that God can do something with. It means to celebrate with praise, because it's a place where you can get rest. I hope you enjoy coming to church. David fled in faith to the place that he needed to be. But then if you notice in verses 19 to 24 of that chapter, in verse 19, it was so told Saul, saying, behold, David is at Naoth. Where? In Ramah. And what did David do? When you come to the 20th chapter, you find after Saul does some things to try to harm David. I'm going to tell you something. There's no better place to be than with God's people. And there was no better person for David to be than with Samuel. He chose to flee. God had already protected him over 10 times, I think the scripture says, that Saul tried to kill him with a javelin. But you know, God arranged that javelin never to hit him. But now David flees out of fear. Let me just share with you a few things about fear as I close tonight. Let me give them to you because I think they're important for us all. Fear. You know, I hear people all the time, what's going to happen to America? I don't know. Matter of fact, I got news for you. I don't even find America in Bible prophecy. We could well be blowing off the map for all I know. But you can't scare me with heaven, and shouldn't scare you with heaven. Fear. Let me say some things about fear, because I'm convinced when you find over here in chapter, when you come here for chapter 19, verse 18, it says, and David fled, that is in faith. He was right with God. Let me make sure we understand something. You can be right with God, and just by making some wrong decisions, you can backslide. You know, it doesn't take long to backslide. It really doesn't. When I come to the 20th chapter, notice he's afraid. Matter of fact, you're going to see him twice in chapter 20, and once again in chapter 20, going to talk about fleeing. He's fleeing in fear. Now, fear, first of all, can drive you to the wrong place and to the wrong people. Be careful with fear. God has not given us the spirit of what? Fear, but a power and a love and of a sound mind. Fear will take away and make your mind almost have the spirit of insanity to it if you're not careful. Look there in verse 1. And David fled from Naoth and Ramah. That is, he left the safe place, he left the sacred place, and he came and he said before Jonathan. You notice this. This is not the first time he makes this statement. What's he say? What have I done? You know, that's not the first time he said that. This one was said out of fear. You go back to chapter 17, if you'll take a moment, and verse 29 of chapter 17. David said, what have I now done? In chapter 17, he says it out of faith. He says, have we not a cause? Because you have Goliath? Why, God can handle Goliath. There's no fear here. But when you come to this 20th chapter, when he says, what have I done? It's out of fear. Isn't it interesting? He goes to Jonathan, he leaves Samuel. Now, Jonathan, if you notice, and I don't have time to deal with that tonight, on three different occasions, makes a covenant with David. You know, I was thinking about that. I don't know the answer to this question. But I often thought, you know, Jonathan really loved David. Did you ever notice that Jonathan was never willing to go wherever David was? Did you ever notice that? He just sort of enjoyed the luxury and the place of the... And I often wondered, someday I get to heaven, somebody said, well, maybe you can ask Jonathan. I won't care about it then. But if you notice, there's a dialogue between Jonathan and David, and he tries again attempting to see if Saul maybe will accept David. As you know the story, it doesn't happen. You notice the last words in verse 42 of chapter 20. Isn't it interesting? These are the last words that Jonathan says to David in that chapter. I have to underline them. And Jonathan said to David, what? Go in peace. Isn't that easy to say? David did not go in peace. He went in fear. You see, the Jonathans of this world can do very little for us. You need to stay in the place that is sacred. You know, I find a lot of people, they say, I'm just going to leave the church and I'm going to go over here. Maybe this person can help me. I got news for you. Stay with the church. Stay in the safe place and the sacred place. Can drive you to the wrong place, the wrong person. Be careful with fear. I know that there's a sense in which you as a church is going through a time, I suppose some people are even afraid of who's going to be the pastor. I want you not to have fear tonight. I want you to have faith that God will give you the right one. Secondly, fear can only drive you to the wrong place and the wrong people, which will diminish your stability and spirituality. Fear will diminish your spirituality and your stability. When I go to that 21st chapter, I notice some things here. Notice here in verse 1. Now David, as he has fled, verse 42 of chapter 20, he leaves Jonathan. Jonathan says, the only thing Jonathan can do to David is say, hey, listen, hope you have a good trip as you're fleeing from my dad. I really don't have the answers. I really don't. David leaves very discouraged. And so all of a sudden now you see here, his stability and his spirituality is diminishing. That's what fear will do. Look there in verse 1. Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. And Ahimelech, notice this, don't miss it. Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David. Underline that. He saw something in David that he had not seen before. David had changed. In other words, he's not very stable. He's definitely not very spiritual, because you find him here in the text doing two things, doing one big thing. I mean, he's lying. He doesn't tell the truth. You can't be spiritual and lie. Hello? He's lying. He's not stable. He is fearful. I want you to go over to James for a moment, and chapter 1, and just turn there for just a moment at James chapter 1 and verse 7. Or verse 8, excuse me. He says, a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. David is not only spiritually diminishing his spirituality, but his ability. Have you noticed people who lose their stability? They jump from one church to another. They don't know this, what they're going to do, and that, what they're going to do. And instability, it normally comes out of fear. They won't admit it. But you can see a change. A double-minded man. You know what that word means? Double-souled. Restless. The other way of a double-minded is one who is restless. He's unstable. And of course, Ahimelech is a very spiritual man. You know anything at all about him? He is. Normally, a spiritual person can detect the instability and the unspirituality of one who is not spiritual. Double-minded. And he lies to him. Look at verse 2. And David said unto Ahimelech, the priest, the king hath commanded me to business, still business, has sent me, said to me, let no man know anything of the business whereof I sent thee, and what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed my servant to such and such a place. That's a lie. There's two things about David in verse 1 and verse 2. Verse 1, I didn't have to say it, but verse 1, he's lonely. He says there at the end of verse 1, why art thou alone? You ever notice that people who live in fear are normally very lonely people? David was a people person. Man, he enjoyed being around people. But now there's no one with him. You know, my prayer is two things about the person you get. Number one, he is a servant leader, not a sovereign leader. And number two, he's a people person. He may not be the greatest preacher, remember, the pulpit is only part of the ministry. Is he a people person? Certainly, is he a servant leader? I'm here to serve my people. David's alone. David just, you know, David's got to have people around. That's just the kind of person he was. But you see, fear drives you to the wrong place and the wrong people, and it diminishes your spirituality and your stability. Thirdly, fear is dedicated only to self-preservation. Boy, mark that one down. You can tell people who are living in fear because the only person that they're concerned about is the one they look in the mirror. How do I know that? Well, I'm glad you asked me. When I come over here, and if I won't take time to read it all, but David goes on with the priest, and he tells the priest, now he's got any food. Well, that's an indication he's out for self-preservation, but that's not the main thing. Look at verse 6 and 7. So the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the show bread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. But then verse 7. Don't miss verse 7. Now a certain man, the servants of Saul was there that day, detained, I'll try it again. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg. I call him Doeg the dog. An Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. Now that man, David should have known, was just a scoundrel. After David leaves there, and you go to chapter 22, you remember what happened to Ahimelech and his family? somebody under Saul's order had him massacred. And you find that one of the boys, Abiathar, one of the priests. Let's look here in chapter 22 for a moment. Verse 18, the king said to Doeg, there he is, turn thou and fall upon the priest. And Doeg the Edomite turned and he fell upon the priest and slew on that day 85 people, really, that died. There was that war, an ephod, little ephod, linen ephod. I want you to know who's responsible for that death of those people. You got any idea who that is? It's David. Matter of fact, he admits it in verse 22 and 23. And David said unto Abiathar, the only one that escaped, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul. Notice what David said, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of the father's house. I'm responsible. Because you see, he who is dedicated only to self-preservation are not thinking about others. And he knew the kind of character that Doeg. I often think, people who backslide, I hear it all the time. What I do is what? Hear it? What's the word? My own business. Oh, no, it isn't. I want you to get that out of your minds because I want you to know that your life affects other people. And there are people today whose lives have been destroyed because they've listened to a backslidden Christian and followed that person. So I share with you tonight, you don't backslide alone. You'll affect other people. Dad, it may be your children. Children, it may be your friends. I still can remember Faith. That was her name. She had none. But I remember her sitting in my office, and I had to say to Faith that day, I'll never forget it. It's been over 27 years. I can remember it as though it was yesterday. I said, Faith, you are infecting our young people here. And I'm going to have you removed from the school. She said, if I go, my dad and mom will go also. She had infected her mom and dad. She left the school, but she only lived one more year. With some of her friends that she took down with her, were killed in a terrible automobile accident where the car went over a cliff and it took 4 days even to find the car. At 18 years of age, went out into eternity. Whether she saved or not, I don't know. She professed to be. You know, we normally don't sin alone. We affect other people. And Doeg, who was there that day, but David didn't care about Amalek and his family. He was only concerned about himself. That's what fear does. Fear not only drives you to the wrong place and the wrong people and diminishes your stability and spirituality and is dedicated only to self-preservation, but number four, it will defile your thinking process. You ever know somebody that you think, I can't figure out what he's thinking by what he's doing? He's really not thinking right. I think I see this. You know, I've read this passage many a time in verse 8 and 9 of chapter 21. Look at it, verse 8. And David said unto Ahimelech, is there not under thy hand a spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. You can write by that, liar. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take that, take it, for there is no other save thee here. Notice the words of David. And David said, there is none like that. Give it to me. Those are sad words. You know, what are your trophies? Here is David. This sword was a trophy. Can I just say this? That should never have been the trophy put up behind the ephod. I want to tell you what should have been put up there. The slingshot that David used. That's what killed Goliath. That's what finished him off, because that sling represented that faith that David had. He no longer had. The sword represented the flesh, but the slingshot represented the faith. Wouldn't it seem strange to see a trophy such as a sling? Now, not the kind, you remember, when you used to, how many remember those slingshots you used to have? Man, I have hit more, never mind, I'm going to get into all that. Broke more window, never mind. What are our trophies? I was visiting a man who had a millionaire, Astoria. But I visited him not to get his money. I was interested in his soul. And I remember a couple times I got him to church and he would raise his hand the need of Christ and never make a decision. I went to his house one day, and it's the most eerie house I've ever been in. He had been to Africa. He had been to Australia. He had been to China. I mean, there were stuff, bears, giraffes, deer, you name it, all. It was spooky. Man, I would not want to sleep in a place like that. These were his trophies. Isn't it sad that those are the trophies people look to of the world? Can I say this with all the, this is a trophy that I cherish so much. The things of God. What are your trophies? You ever lead someone to Christ? That's a trophy. You ever see someone, missionary that you help? That's a trophy, Brother Fair. That's a trophy. The Hess, that's a trophy. What are your trophies? They pretty well tell where you are. One final thing. Fear will not only drive you to the wrong place and the wrong people and diminish your stability and spirituality and dedicate it only to your self-preservation and defile your thinking process. But ready for this? It will decide your decisions. Fear will decide your decision. Look there again in verse 10 as I close tonight. And he got the sword, and David arose, and he fled that day for fear of Saul, and he went to Achish, the king of Gath. Now, isn't that interesting? He is not thinking, is he? Now, Saul wanted to kill him. So did the Philistines. But out of fear, he flees from one enemy to the other enemy. And you find here in verse 13, he changed his behavior before them. I tell you what he did. He changed on the outside what he had become on the inside. For there's no difference between a person who is insane than a person who is in sin. And here he is. Someone said, if you hang around a mental institution, you'll become like one of the inmates. David is becoming one of the inmates. So unstable. And of course, but verse 15 said, I have need of a madman? Do I need somebody like David? You know, I won't have time tonight, but I'm glad David left there. He did an interesting thing, and I'm going to deal with it when I come back. The Lord lets me come back. Of course, if you have a pastor at that time, I'm coming back anyway to preach this message. Because I want to see David in the cave. know that cave is so interesting. I want to preach a whole message on the cave experience. C-A-V-E, that's a cave. You know what that C stands for? That C stands for a contrition over his sin. You ever note that word, contrition? It is found, and I'm going to deal with it when I come back, but I cannot leave without making that point. Look over there as I close. The Isaiah 66. The sacrifices of God, a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. That's Psalm 51. But look at Isaiah 66 in verse 2. For all these things had my hand made, and all those things have been set, the Lord. But to this man will I look, even to that who is poor and of a what? Contrite spirit. And trembleth at my word. You know what that word contrite means? It's a word which means to be grounded in pieces over your sin. David, when he comes to the cave, looks back, sees what he did to Ahimelech, calls his death, sees what he did when he had more emphasis on the sword than he did the sling. He looks back when he went to the wrong places, and he's a broken man. The sacrifices of God are broken, contrite heart before God, tore in. You know, that's something we don't have today. We almost like to use 1 John 1:9. We confess our sin. You know, that's kind of the, you know, I know what this is wrong, what I'm going to do, but I can always use 1 John 1:9. The idea of that verse is contrition. To be broken, to grind into pieces when you've done it, to say, oh God, I was wrong. That's what David. Now, he couldn't undo 85 people dying, but God will forgive him. No matter what we do, isn't that wonderful? If we have a contrite heart before God.